Welcome to the Backasswards Podcast. We are the Backasswards Boys. I'm Kyle. I use he, they pronouns. And joining me from our amazing Colorado studio, newly, freshly painted, is Arden.
And I use he, him pronouns. Painted,
not Arden.
Yes, and my room is now painted white, which I'm very excited about. Yes, and I use he, him pronouns.
Tonight, guys, gals, and NB pals, oh boy, we are just going to keep chugging along with JFK here. I was saying, I said at the end of this outline that, you know, we've maybe got one or two conspiracy episodes left with this, but talking about what we've got left to talk about with Arden, he's saying we're like right in the middle of it. So,
yeah.
Go ahead and stick it out with us. We're going to be talking about a lot of stuff today, some things that Arden has been very excited to talk about.
Yes.
It's going to be great.
And can I also just say, like, I really do feel like this series is building in a really good way, because I feel like everything is stacking on top of each other. And the more that I learn, the more, like, concrete I become in some of my thoughts, kind of like what we were talking about before the episode started. And I'm very, very excited to get into what we're going to be talking about tonight. It is JFK Part 7, and Professor Kyle is here again, folks. And you know that this is going to be a treat. I'm so excited.
But before the treat, let's do what we always do and list our sources. And as you know, the first stop on the research train is our good friend Wikipedia.
Because we stand Wikipedia on this motherfucking podcast for so long, we have, and we will continue to, by the way.
I used their pages on John F. Kennedy assassination conspiracy theories. I also used their pages on the autopsy of John F. Kennedy and their page on Nellie Connelly. I also used information from jfkassassination.net, the Warren Commission Report Appendix 12 from the National Archives. I used an article from history.com called Why the Public Stopped Believing the Government About JFK's Murder. And I used an article from time.com titled What We Know and Still Don't Know About JFK's Assassination.
I like how you put it in the middle of your source list, but we have the Warren Commission in this outline from the National Archives. Okay, I see you, Professor Kyle. I'm ready for that for sure.
Yeah. We're going to talk about some bullshit.
I see how you sneaked it in there. I don't think I didn't notice.
But obviously, you guys, even though we use both Wikipedia and the National Archives, we are not scholars.
No,
and we're probably going to get some things wrong.
Because we use both the National Archives and Wikipedia in tandem. That is why we are not scholars.
And we use Wikipedia first. We are also not linguists. We are probably going to say some things wrong. Arden has a really fun word in one of his quotes.
Yeah, and I'm still worried about pronouncing it, but we'll see. I apologize in advance.
I apologize for giving it to you.
It's all right. He's the one who said it, not you.
Now, hold on to your asses, because things are about to get backwards.
It's JFK Part 7, and I don't know if you guys have made your tinfoil hats yet, but if you haven't, pause the episode. Go get them on, because you want to get nitty and fucking gritty? That's what we're doing tonight. Take us into it, Kyle. We're ready.
And we're going to get right into it. We're not going to mess around too much with reintroducing anything today. We are going to go over a little bit of information that we've already talked about, because it has been a couple of weeks.
But a we'll couple of weeks. Yeah, I'll say.
The Warren Commission concluded that three shots were fired from the Texas School Book Depository in a time period ranging from approximately 4.8 seconds to in excess of 7 seconds.
Already assassination crazy. Research. Already crazy. The first sentence. I can't believe this.
Some assassination researchers, including Josiah Thompson and Anthony Summers, dispute the commission's findings. You can also add Kyle Joseph Houston onto that list.
Yeah, same.
They point to evidence that brings into question the number of shots fired, the origin of the shots, and Oswald's ability to accurately fire three shots in such a short amount of time from such a rifle. We're going to talk about two of the three here. We're going to talk about Oswald's ability next week.
Yeah, I'm ready for that too.
These researchers suggest and assert that multiple gunmen were involved in the shooting. Based on consensus among the witnesses at the scene, and in particular, the three spent cartridges found near an open window of the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository, the Warren Commission determined that the preponderance of the evidence indicated that three shots were fired.
Mm-hmm.
However, in 1979, the House Select Committee on Assassinations, the HSCA, concluded that there were four shots, specifically with one coming from the grassy knoll.
So the Warren Commission and the HSCA are in disagreement here, huh?
Oh, yeah, not for the first time.
Huh. Okay. Oh, I am having such a hard time with this. Oh, boy. Okay, just keep going. I'm sorry.
To reference back to, last week, 2 weeks ago, I can't even remember at this point. Mary Mormon said in a TV interview that immediately after the assassination that there were either three or four shots very close together, and that shots were still being fired after the fatal shot, and that she was in the line of fire.
It is so fucking over. And we're at the beginning of the outline, so I can't really say what I'm thinking right now, but it is so over, dude. Oh, my God. Okay, that is crazy. And what a precarious situation for her to be in. Because again, like what you mentioned last week in JFK 6, what a miraculous coincidence that this picture happened at the exact moment that it happened. And if you look at the Zapruder film, which we were watching before we recorded this episode, Mary Mormon is standing right there when JFK gets shot.
You see her in the Zapruder film. Yeah.
She is right fucking there. So close to him. Like, and she is concerned about her safety based off of her perception of where the bullets came from. Which
and to
crazy.
Be clear, to say that it's insane that she got that picture time that well, that's not conspiratorial. Like, no. You couldn't plan that.
No.
Like, even with modern technology, timing something like that is hard.
No.
You know?
Exactly. It is.
And, like, she would have to be in on the conspiracy. Like, no. We're just saying it's fucking insane that it timed out. Like, that is a one in a fucking trillion that she got that close to that shot, you know?
And that is the genuine answer to that, by the way. That actually just happened that way. And that's what's crazy about it.
Yeah. In 1967, Josiah Thompson concluded from a close study of the Zapruder film and other forensic evidence, corroborated by the eyewitnesses, that four shots were fired in Dealey Plaza, with one wounding Connolly and three hitting Kennedy.
Three bullets impacted the president?
That's what Josiah Thompson says.
And one of them wounding Connolly, causing, I don't know, like three wounds on his body or something. Which again, we talked about, we did mention this last week from where the badge man was, which the badge man couldn't be the shooter, just by the way. But from where the badge man was, if they were coming from the right of the presidential motorcade, the shooter, then it would have been able to hit Governor Connolly's right wrist and then impact his left leg. So that vantage point makes sense for Governor Connolly's injuries.
Yes.
That's where I imagine the one bullet that hurt him came from, you know what I mean?
The Warren Commission concluded that all of the shots fired at President Kennedy came from the sixth floor window at the southeast corner of the Texas School Book Depository. This is where the sniper's nest was located.
Okay.
The commission based its conclusion on cumulative evidence of eyewitnesses, firearms and ballistic experts, and medical authorities, including on-site testing as well as analysis of films and photographs conducted by the FBI and the United States Secret Service and the CIA. But in 1979, the HSCA agreed to publish a report from the Warren Commission critic Robert Grodin, in which he named nearly two dozen suspected firing points in Dealey Plaza.
Whoa! Slow your roll!
These sites included multiple locations in or on the roof of the Texas School Book Depository, the Dow Tex Building just down the street, the Dallas County Records Building, the triple overpass of the freeway, the grassy knoll, and even a storm drain located along the north curb of Elm Street.
Whoa. Okay, so there's a lot. This guy's got a lot of ideas.
To address it right now, because we're not really going to come back to it, one interesting note about that storm drain. The shots didn't come from the storm drain, to be clear.
Yeah.
But one interesting note about the storm drain is people have checked the mapping of the public works in that mm-hmm. area.
Mm-hmm.
And after the assassination, that storm drain was filled in.
What?
And that's about all the evidence that people have to support that. But
I mean, that is kind of crazy. That is interesting. I don't know, man. That's kind of cool. It's kind of a good point. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Josiah Thompson concluded that the shots fired at the motorcade came from three locations: the Texas School Book Depository, the Grassy Knoll, and the Dallas County Records Building.
Okay. All right. So this is where he landed. So.
Yes.
How many shots does he say happened?
Four.
Four. So,
yes.
Two of them are happening in one location, and there's at least one other shot in two locations.
I believe he says that two came from the school book depository. So, like we were talking about, planted evidence. One came from the grassy knoll, and then one came, I believe, the fatal shot he believes came from the records building. We're going to talk a little bit more about his theories next week in more depth, though.
All right. Okay. I'll put a pin in that. But that is very interesting. Why are there three shell casings? Was one of them planted? Interesting.
According to some researchers, the grassy knoll was identified by most witnesses as the area from where the shots were fired. In March of 1965, Harold Fieldman wrote that there were 121 witnesses to the assassination listed in the Warren Report. 51 indicated that the shots that killed Kennedy came from the grassy knoll, while only 32 said that the shots originated from the Texas School Book Depository.
Wow.
In 1967, Josiah Thompson examined the statements of 64 witnesses and concluded that 33 of them thought that the shots emanated from the grassy knoll.
Damn. Okay.
In 1966, Esquire magazine credited Fieldman with advancing the theory that there were two assassins, one on the grassy knoll and one in the book depository.
I'm not going to lie to you. I haven't considered the grassy knoll that much in this series. And now you're kind of fucking with me a little bit.
Listen, I don't fuck with the badge man. That does not mean I don't fuck with the grassy knoll.
Interesting. You know? Okay. I have to open my brain. I will admit, I haven't been thinking about the grassy knoll over the past 6 weeks. So I'm kind of.
I mean,
we haven't been talking
about the grassy knoll too much. So.
Right.
We got to build to it.
Yeah.
According to a 2021 article in Frontiers in Psychology, discrepancies in ear witness testimony regarding the original gunshots have, quote,
contributed to the breadth and persistence of the conspiracy theories that had emerged since the assassination.
Dennis McFadden, with the Center of Perceptual Systems at the University of Texas at Austin, summarized, quote,
localizing the origin of a supersonic gunshot is not easy under optimal conditions. On the day of the JFK assassination, the ear witnesses present were startled, surprised, confused, disbelieving, excited, and likely scared. So there is little wonder that their perceptions were inconsistent and, with the passage of time, fluid. Once the confusing acoustics of supersonic bullets and the vagaries of human sound localization are taken into account, the widespread uncertainty amongst the ear witnesses to the assassination becomes more understandable. That is, and that is something very interesting. Like, I do want to give credit to this man right here. This is something that we talk about all the fucking time on this podcast.
All the time.
Particularly when it comes to true crime, events that actually fucking happen to real people, right? It is so hard to get eyewitness, or in this case, ear witness accounts. You know what I mean? And
especially consistent ones, because
mm-hmm.
despite what we want to believe, our memories are very faulty, especially in these moments where we're not expecting something and our senses are immediately heightened, right? It's one thing to be able to pinpoint a sound, a gunshot, when you're listening for it and you're expecting it.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing to, after the fact, try and remember and place where exactly these things came from, especially days and weeks later when they were being interviewed, right?
Exactly. And it's even like, you can even tell your same story over and over and over again, and you're just going to add shit in or leave shit out just based off of what you remember. And your monkey brain, again, your lizard monkey brain, loves to put a bow on things. So you're literally filling in the details, not only as it's happening to you, but in the process of trying to remember what happened to you. It's crazy.
And that's a subconscious process. You're not actively thinking about doing that. Your brain just does that.
Exactly.
Everybody's. Mm-hmm. That's just what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Arden, this is another one that you wanted to talk about.
Oh boy, I'm so excited.
This is someone that got talked about in one of the documentaries I sent you.
Yes.
Lee Bowers operated a radio tower. Lee Bowers operated a railroad tower that overlooked the parking lot on the north side of the grassy knoll.
Okay.
When interviewed by the Warren Commission in 1964, he reported that he saw two men behind the grassy knoll's stockyard fence before the shooting took place. The men didn't appear to be acting together or doing anything outwardly suspicious. After the shooting, Bauer said that one of the men remained behind the fence, but that he lost track of the second man, whose clothing blended into the foliage.
Hmm.
When interviewed by Mark Lane and Emile D'Antonio in 1966 for their documentary film Rush to Judgment, Bowers noted that he saw something that attracted his attention, either a flash of light or smoke from the knoll, allowing him to believe that something out of the ordinary had occurred there. Bowers told Lane that he heard three shots, with the last two being in quick succession.
You want to know something? This kind of helps with the speed of the shots as well, if there are two assassins. You know what I mean? That would make sense why people were hearing shots so close together. But also,
you know what else it would explain, Arden?
Hmm.
It would explain why the two bullet wounds on Kennedy's body are so vastly different in their effect on his body.
You know what? I hadn't even considered that, but you're making such a good point when you say that, because, again, before the episode started, huge trigger warning on this. Me and Kyle looked at a couple of the autopsy photos from JFK.
Because we're about to get to the autopsy here.
It's what they say are the autopsy photos. You know what I'm saying, folks?
Spoiler alert.
But here's the thing, is that you're exactly right in the impact that those wounds had on his body. They are vastly different. And I hadn't even considered that. That's a really good point that you're bringing up. I'm looking forward to exploring that a little bit more.
Several conspiracy theorists posit that at least one shooter was located in the Daltex building, which was across the street from the Texas School Book Depository building.
And I believe,
let me pull up the Dealey Plaza here so you can see this.
Yeah, and I believe that for our audience, and even for me, this is the first appearance that this Daltex building is making in this series, which is kind of a curveball to throw in at part 7 of our JFK series, you know? But here's another location for you folks.
Oh, if you think that's the last curveball we've got, Arden.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, I know. Coming. All right. So I just sent that in the chat for you so you can see this map here.
Let me pull it up real quick, Professor. Okay. So there's the Texas School Book Depository.
The Daltex building is across the street, still on Elm Street, right? But it has a very different angle and view of the presidential motorcade. And then on the left-hand side of the screen, the railroad over there, that is where Lee Bowers Tower would have been.
So he's literally...
Which would
so that's
see
the north end.
That fence, right? Because that stockade fence there is where the badge man is allegedly on that side with no trees, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That right-hand side. So he would have seen where the badge man would have been. And he says there were people there.
Right, by the fence. And they weren't doing anything suspicious, but he noticed them. And one of them kind of blended in.
Mm-hmm.
Which again, like if you connect that to badge man, allegedly he was wearing like greenish uniform.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, he was wearing a police uniform.
A police uniform, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Which could have been.
And then that triple overpass is another place that people say there could have been a shooter, right?
Right. Right, and that police officer
but
could have been J.D. Tippett.
I don't think we're
going to
talk about that too much, so. It could have been J.D. Tippett.
Mr. Tips, perhaps. Okay. This is... So the Daltex building, that's interesting to me. That's really
because
interesting.
Because the Daltex building has a better angle than the Texas School Book Depository does.
I guess it's true. It's less obstructed.
It's less obstructed. There's no trees in the way. It's straight on. So you have to account for way less movement as a sniper, as an assassin. It's a way easier shot.
Bro, didn't they... Hold on. Wait a second. Didn't you say in our Lee Oswald episode, I'm so dumb, why haven't I thought about this? Didn't you say in our Lee Oswald episode that like they flipped a coin and one of them went to the Texas School Book Depository and the other one went to the Daltex building? Am I losing my mind?
I did say that. No, you're not losing your mind.
No, Kyle, I'm literally about to cry. Stop. No.
Arden, when I say we've got to build to it, I mean we've got to build to it.
Oh, God, this is fucking with me so hard, dude. Oh, no.
Because it might have come to a coin flip, but what if the coin flip was rigged, Arden?
I think I can say very safely at this point in the series, I think this is the moment that my brain melted. This is the actual moment that it happened.
This is where you start to see the Matrix.
I deserve to know the truth, but the truth hurts.
And again, this is a little seed I'm planting. We're gonna talk a bit more about it next week. According to L. Fletcher Prouty, the physical location of James Tague when he was injured by a bullet fragment is not consistent with the trajectory of a missed shot from the Texas School Book Depository, leading Prouty to theorize that Tague was instead wounded by a missed shot from the second floor of the Daltex building.
Interesting. Okay.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about the Daltex building next week. I know I just melted your brain with it, Arden.
Yeah.
But we're going to come back to it. Don't worry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Another little interesting tidbit, though, that points to another shooter in another location. Some researchers claim that the FBI photographs of the presidential limousine, of the presidential limousine show a bullet hole in its windshield above the rearview mirror and a crack in the windshield itself. When Robert Groden, author of The Killing of a President, asked for an explanation, the FBI responded that what Groden thought was a bullet hole was damage that had actually occurred prior to Dallas.
What? What? But that doesn't make any sense, Kyle.
Really doesn't.
The bullet hitting it makes a lot more sense than, oh, it was damaged before we got to fucking Dallas.
And they didn't replace the president's windshield. Like, this campaign stop was all about image. And swaying voters, right? And he's going to show up with a broken windshield? Absolutely not.
You want to talk about a tan suit on a fucking president? Talk about the fucking broken windshield on the president. You know what I mean? Oh, my God. They would have roasted him.
Because that perfectly fits the optics of, you know, this clear, clean presidency, but it's actually, you know, cracked, right? Like, no, they would have, that would have been a headline. Abso-fucking-lutely not.
No, that windshield got shotched, okay?
In 1993, George Whitaker, a manager at the Ford Motor Company's Rogue plant in Detroit, told attorney and criminal justice professor Doug Weldon that after reporting to work on November 25th, 1963, 3 days after the assassination, he discovered the presidential limousine in the Rogue plant's B building with its windshield removed.
Stop.
Whitaker said that the limousine's removable windshield had a through-and-through bullet hole from the front. He said that he was directed by one of Ford's vice presidents to use the windshield as a template to fabricate a new windshield for installation in the limousine. And Whitaker also said that he was told to destroy the old one.
This is what I'll say. I didn't think that I could be this emotionally invested in a windshield. I'm going to tell you right now. That's fishy as hell. Why? Also, when you say that a through and through bullet hole from the front, are you implying that the bullet entered from the front of the windshield? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Dude.
Which means that shot could not have come from the Texas School Book Depository or the Daltex building. Could have come from the grassy knoll, but most likely it would have had to come from that overpass.
You know, on this show, we talk about like ghost soup or serial killer soup and stuff like that. This is conspiracy soup. This is the most important windshield in United States history. I swear to God, this is fucking insane. You are blowing my mind right now with this evidence.
Film and photographic evidence of the assassination has led viewers to different conclusions regarding the origin of the shots. When the fatal shot struck, the president's head and upper torso move rapidly backwards, indicating to many observers a shot from the right front or the grassy knoll. Sherry Gutierrez, a certified crime scene and bloodstain pattern analyst, concluded that the head injury to President Kennedy was the result of a single gunshot fired from the right front of the president. And Paul Chambers believes that the fatal headshot is consistent with a high velocity or 4,000 feet per second rifle rather than the medium velocity or 2,000 feet per second Mannlicher Carcino rifle that Oswald allegedly fired.
Which is connecting exactly back to what you were saying about the different levels of severity that the wounds on the president's body have. Which is what you were trying to get me to see with the picture before we started. I understand now. Thank you, Professor.
Yes. Close inspection of the Zapruder film, specifically frames 312 and 313, show that Kennedy's head moves downward immediately before it moves rapidly backward. Anthony Mars suggests that this downward motion was caused by the driver William Greer's deceleration of the car. Others, including Josiah Thompson, Robert Groden, and Cyril Wecht, suggest that this downward and then backward motion was caused by two near simultaneous bullets, one from the rear and the other from the right front.
I don't know about that one, folks. I don't know about that. It is interesting that they are commenting on his head movement because his head does move like that.
Yeah.
And I do think it's interesting that it could be the car decelerating, but
now
his
I
head
watch
is
the Zapruder film again.
But what you will also notice from the Zapruder film, Kyle, and I wonder if you'll see this the same way that I did, he's already moving his head in a downward motion that entire time. He's like grabbing his neck. He's probably like gasping for breath or something. He's looking down.
Because he has already been hit.
Yes, he's already hit at this point. two simultaneous bullets at the same time, that would be wild. It would also connect back to a funny conspiracy that we talked about in JFK 6, where it's just like,
it's the two
just
separate
happened
conspiracies.
To be two guys. Yeah. Just happened to be two guys doing it for two different reasons at the exact same time. So I guess after watching the Zapruder film a little bit more.
Yeah, we just took a little break. Yeah, we just took a little break, a little research break in the show here. We probably just watched those frames of the Zapruder film about 100 times.
Yeah. There's a lot to talk about there.
There's a lot to talk about there.
And we're going to get to it. I do think, however, that what you brought up, Kyle, as we were just watching it, that if the two simultaneous bullets happen at the exact same time, like what Josiah Thompson is kind of alleging here, that would kind of support Governor Connolly getting hit in that moment, right? And getting those wounds. Because, again, if you watch the Zapruder film, it is very interesting to watch Governor Connolly in that film, because he is very, very nonchalant until frame 313, which is a very interesting circumstance to be in, because again, allegedly the bullet that went through JFK's neck also hit Governor Connolly, causing 7 total wounds, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
We can't get too lost in the sauce here. Let's keep moving. No. In 1975, the Rockefeller Commission appointed a panel of experts to review the movement of Kennedy's head and body following the fatal headshot. The panel concluded that the violent backward and leftward motion of the president's upper body following the headshot was not caused by the impact of a bullet coming from the front rut, but was caused by a violent straightening and stiffening of the entire body as a result of a seizure-like neuromuscular reaction to major damage inflicted to nerve centers in the brain. Death throes, basically.
Wow, okay.
In 1979, the HSCA agreed with the Warren Commission that Oswald killed Kennedy, but concluded that the commission's report and the original FBI investigation were seriously flawed. The HSCA concluded that at least four shots were fired, with a high probability that two gunmen fired at Kennedy and that a conspiracy was probable. The HSCA stated that the Warren Commission had failed to investigate adequately the possibility of a conspiracy to assassinate the president.
Damn, that's a pretty big statement coming from the HSCA to the Warren Commission. Wild.
However, because of course no evidence in this fucking case is clear cut, the acoustical analysis that the HSCA presented as evidence for two gunmen has been somewhat discredited since then.
Really?
The HSCA acoustic experts said that the dictabelt evidence, which is the microphone system that some of the police in Dallas were using, that came from police officer H.B. McLaren's radio microphone that was stuck in the open position. However, McLean stated that he wasn't in Dealey Plaza yet when the assassination occurred.
Oh.
He asked the committee, quote,
"If it was my radio on my motorcycle, why did it not record the revving up at high speed plus my siren when we immediately took off for Parkland Hospital?" Whoa. Kyle, they planted evidence of the gunshot acoustics? What an odd angle to take from the HSCA here. I'm kind of, you like you said, more curveballs. Very interesting. Yeah. Because he makes a good point there.
Yeah. Because if it wasn't his microphone, then whose was it?
Whose microphone was it? Yeah. Who would be recording this?
Also, in 1982, a panel of 12 scientists appointed by the National Academy of Sciences, including Nobel laureates Norman Ramsey and Luis Alvarez, unanimously concluded that the HSCA's acoustic evidence was, quote, seriously flawed. They concluded that the recording was made after the president had already been shot and that the recordings did not indicate any additional gunshots. Their conclusions were later published in the journal Science.
Wow.
In a 2001 article in Science and Justice, a publication of Britain's Forensic Science Society, D.B. Thomas wrote that the National Academy of Sciences investigation was itself flawed. Thomas analyzed the audio recordings made during the assassination, and it concluded with a 96% certainty that a shot was fired from the grassy knoll in front of and to the right of the president's limousine. In 2005, Thomas's conclusions were rebutted in this same journal. Ralph Linsker and several members of the original NAS team reanalyzed the recordings and reaffirmed the earlier conclusions of the NAS report that alleged the shots were recorded approximately 1 minute after the assassination. In a 2010 book, D.B. Thomas challenged the 2005 Science and Justice article and restated his conclusion that there were actually two gunmen.
Okay. All right. So they're going back and forth pretty much on what this conclusion is, right? A 96% certainty that a shot was fired from the grassy knoll. 96% in 2001. And then it was rebutted, and then he doubled down, basically.
And I do think it's worth noting that that's a United States government-backed research study rebutting this evidence versus a foreign private investigation showing that there were two gunmen. I think that's worth noting.
It is worth noting. You want to know what this is also reminding me of? Is the Bone Wars, where they would diss each other in like scientific journals and stuff. This is what this is reminding me of.
Now, Arden, I've been teasing you for a few weeks now, and I feel bad for leading you on for so long. So let's finally talk about this autopsy.
Thank you, Professor Kyle. Thank you so much.
The Secret Service was concerned about the possibility of a larger plot and urged the new president, Lyndon B. Johnson, to leave Dallas and return to the White House immediately. However, Johnson refused to do so without any proof of Kennedy's death. Johnson returned to Air Force One around 1:30 p.m. and shortly thereafter, he received telephone calls from advisors McGeorge Bundy and Walter Jenkins advising him to return to Washington, D.C. immediately once again. But he replied that he would not leave Dallas without the president's wife and that she would not leave Dallas without Kennedy's body.
Mm-hmm.
According to Esquire, as we quoted before, Johnson did not want to be remembered as an abandoner of beautiful widows.
Right. And there's a lot of reasons why Lyndon B. Johnson would not leave at this moment, for a lot of optics reasons, perhaps personal, moral reasons, et cetera, right?
Conspiratorial reasons.
Mm-hmm. And so just remember that he did not leave. That's the truth of it. He didn't leave until Jackie could leave, and Jackie wouldn't leave without his body. So,
Dallas County Medical Examiner Earl Rose was at Parkland Hospital when he learned that President Kennedy had been pronounced dead. Rose entered the trauma room where Kennedy's body laid and was confronted by Secret Service agent Roy Kellerman and Kennedy's personal physician, George Berkeley, who said that there was no time to perform an autopsy because Jacqueline Kennedy would not leave Dallas without her husband's body, which needed to be delivered promptly to the airport.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Hold on. Not, huh? What? Huh? You said, what? Not enough time to do the autopsy on the president who just got fucking domed?
Yeah, you might want to do that pretty quick, you know?
I get that she wants to leave with the body. I completely understand Jackie's perspective in this, but perhaps...
But maybe to be a little morbid, it's not like she needs to be in a hurry at this point.
And this is just me. And this is just me over here. But you could still do the autopsy. And just like what you said, like, it's not like it has to, you don't have to like
hurry
up about it.
You can wait 12 hours. You can wait 12 hours.
Yeah.
You know?
And then Lyndon B. Johnson can be president. That's fine. It just happened. This is the best time to do the autopsy. Oh no, Kyle.
But Arden, a big part of this problem and part of the ensuing problem with the autopsy is that at the time of President Kennedy's assassination, the murder of the president was not under the jurisdiction of any federal organization.
I remember you mentioning this. There was a big conflict.
Yes, because of this, Dr. Rose insisted that Texas law required him to perform a postmortem examination. By law, he had to do this. A heated exchange ensued as he argued with Kennedy's aides, and Kennedy's body was placed in a coffin and then, accompanied by Jacqueline, it was rolled down the corridor on a gurney. Rose was reported to have stood in the hospital doorway, backed by a Dallas policeman, to physically stop anybody from removing the coffin. The presidential aides engaged in an explicit argument with Dallas officials until, according to Robert Caro's The Years of Lyndon Johnson, they literally shoved Rose and the policeman aside to get out of the building. Rose later stated that he did not fight back because he felt it was unwise to escalate tensions further. He fucking thought he was going to get shot by the Secret Service.
Yeah, so they were basically like, give us the body, fuck you, and they literally took it and left.
Yeah.
You want to talk about a rushed autopsy, yeah.
Oh, just wait.
God.
General Godfrey McHugh ordered Kennedy's body to be illegally transported to Walter Reed Army Medical Center before the choice of hospital was deferred to Jacqueline Kennedy.
Whoa.
Kennedy's aides disagreed as to where the autopsy should be conducted. Kennedy's personal physician, Rear Admiral George Berkeley, pushed for Bethesda Navy Hospital. However, Major General Ted Clifton instructed Surgeon General Leonard D. Heaton that it should be conducted at Walter Reed Army Medical Center.
Right. Our favorite reoccurring character in this series.
Yes. General Godfrey McHugh ordered an ambulance to transport Kennedy's body to Walter Reed. When he was informed that it was illegal to do so in D.C. without the permission of a coroner, McHugh offered to pay the fine.
What? Dude, you can't do that. Oh my God, that's what they talk about.
Anything's legal if you have money, man.
Yeah. Oh God.
Rear Admiral Berkeley then consulted with Jacqueline Kennedy, who was initially reluctant to even have an autopsy.
What?
Interesting fact.
I guess. I mean, it is interesting. I don't know.
But then she did eventually select Bethesda Naval Hospital because President Kennedy had been a naval officer during World War II, so it made sense for him to go to the Naval Hospital.
Right.
And she actually chose Secret Service agent William Greer, who was driving the motorcade, because she felt sorry for him because he faulted himself for having not done more to save the president. And she selected him to drive the casket to Bethesda. And as the body was transported from Andrews Air Force Base to Bethesda, crowds of mourners lined the roads. It was a very big deal. It was on the news. It was one of those things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now here's where it gets fucky, Arden.
Oh God.
No, here's where it gets fucky. Yes.
Right.
Navy Surgeon General Edward C. Kenny ordered two naval medical doctors, Commander James Humes and Commander J. Thornton Boswell, to conduct the autopsy. Humes was selected as lead surgeon, and Boswald called the decision to conduct the autopsy at Bethesda stupid and argued that it should have been held at the Specialized Armed Forces Institute of Pathology, AFIP, which was just 5 minutes away, which is honestly kind of fair. The people who specifically know about this shit should maybe be doing it.
Right.
Because although they had both conducted autopsies before, neither of them were trained or certified in forensic pathology.
Okay.
At 7:35 p.m. on November 22nd, Humes and Boswell removed Kennedy's body from the bronze casket and began the autopsy. Around 24 people, including military officers, were in attendance.
Here's the thing, man. These guys haven't done autopsies before.
Autopsies before. They just weren't trained specifically in forensic pathology, which is what you use when you're doing a autopsy on a body that was involved in a crime to figure out more information about the crime, right?
And here's the thing, and here's what I was going to say. I also hate getting called into work. However, if I got called into work in my forensic pathology job and they were like, hey, the president just got shot, I need you to come in, I'm probably coming into work, dude. Like, call the guy who's supposed to do this, you know,
or literally
whoever. Oh my God.
But they were in a rush. Admiral Berkeley, JFK's personal physician, urged the doctors to expedite the autopsy, saying, quote,
all we need is the bullet. I'm about to throw this fucking microphone across my newly painted white-walled room, dude, because I am so upset about this. Ooh, I'm like mad at that.
Dr. Humes and Boswell, however, argued for a thorough and complete autopsy, but they did temporarily kowtow and just start fucking doing shit, right?
Right.
Some of the medical personnel took photographs, both black and white and color, and x-rays of his head. We saw some of these photographs before we recorded.
Yeah.
The x-rays revealed around 40 small bullet fragments along the bullet's trajectory through Kennedy's head, with two of them being large enough to be of interest to the investigators. Meaning two of them were big enough that they could maybe reconstruct something. The rest were powder, basically, right?
Right.
Dr. Humes and Boswell then contacted wound ballistics expert Lieutenant Colonel Pierre Fink of AFIP for assistance. But they grew tired of waiting for him and just removed the two fragments.
What? Oh. We gotta hurry up. Jackie won't leave without the body. We gotta go. Come on. Just take him out. Just fucking take him out. He's dead. It's fine. Like, what are they doing?
They also extracted Kennedy's entire brain that was left and placed it in formaldehyde for later study.
They don't tell you that in school.
Yeah. Fink arrived soon thereafter and examined the head wound with Boswell and Humes. Kennedy's body was then turned onto its side to examine the other wound. Three identified an entry point in Kennedy's back, but were unable to find the corresponding exit wound or the bullet upon initial probing.
No, Kyle. No.
Because of this, Fink argued for a complete radiological survey of the body, full x-rays, and Humes suggested that they conduct a complete autopsy. This angered Admiral Berkeley, who argued that Jacqueline only wanted a limited autopsy.
I mean, I'm sorry. I don't care. Do the autopsy. I'm sorry.
Well, then you would agree with Admiral Calvin Galloway, who was the commanding officer of the U.S. Navy Medical Center, who overruled Berkeley and ordered the doctors to carry out an entire autopsy. However, after further examination and the full body x-rays, no bullet or major fragment was recovered from Kennedy's body.
Yep. Uh-huh. 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 I see where this is going, and I'm already mad.
Because, Arden, do you remember it, MK Ultra and the Edgewood Arsenal, when we talked about these guns that were developed in the 50s, a decade before this,
mm-hmm,
that could shoot into someone and not leave a trace?
Mm-hmm.
These toxins that could be delivered?
I do remember.
Maybe just to make sure, you know, a little extra guarantee that the president goes down.
Maybe it was shot out of a umbrella, perhaps, you know, you never know.
But the physicians were puzzled, and the observer suggested various hypotheses, that the projectile was a soft point like bullet, it was made of plastic or ice, until an FBI agent informed the physicians that a bullet had just been found at Parkland Medical Center.
This is what I was talking about. This is what's about to piss me off.
The missing bullet that was found on a used stretcher at Parkland Memorial Hospital then became the subject of the Warren Commission's single bullet theory.
Now, here's the thing, folks. Here's the thing. When you pair what Kyle just said to us about they could not find any corresponding material. They couldn't find any bullet fragments upon observing the neck wound that President Kennedy suffered, right? All of the sudden, this bullet shows up on the fucking gurney at Parkland. And I'm telling you right now, I'm holding back my anger. That makes no sense at all. And again, if you pair this with what we've said about this bullet, because we have talked about this bullet at least two or three times in the series, that bullet is immaculate. It is in perfect condition. And that is no way, dude. I don't like it.
After midnight, three skull fragments that were discovered by the Secret Service were brought to the pathologists. They noted that the largest fragment had what appeared to be an exit wound, which was confirmed when x-rays found metal fragments. After completing the autopsy just after midnight, Hughes informed the waiting FBI agents that Kennedy had been hit by two bullets from behind to the back and to the head. He concluded that the latter bullet had been fatal and that the former had worked its way out of the body during cardiac massage at Parkland, which would be like CPR, right?
Oh, that's crazy. That's a crazy experience to have. You're giving someone CPR and then a bullet pops out of them.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, not to make light of this. We could take this out, but why are you trying to resuscitate him, dude? What are you doing?
Can you imagine giving CPR to a dude that literally doesn't have a brain? Like, come on.
What are you doing? I'm sorry.
It's wild. Berkeley signed a death certificate on November 23rd and noted that the cause of death was a gunshot wound to the skull. He described the fatal head wound as, quote,
something shattering in tap, causing a fragmentation of the skull, an evulsion of three particles of the skull at the time of the impact, with the resultant maceration of the right hemisphere of the brain.
He also noted that a second wound occurred in the posterior back at about the level of the third thoracic vertebra. A second certificate of death signed on December 6th by Theron Ward, who was a justice of the peace in Dallas County, stated that Kennedy died as a result of two gunshot wounds, one near the center of the body and just above the right shoulder, and one inch to the right center of the back of the head. The HSCA contained a forensic pathology panel, often simply described as the medical panel, that undertook the unique task of reviewing original autopsy photographs and x-rays and interviewing the autopsy personnel as to their authenticity. The panel and the HSCA then went on to make some medical conclusions based off of this evidence. The committee's forensic pathology panel included nine members, eight of whom were chief medical examiners in major local jurisdictions in the United States. So, very, very, very well-educated people.
Mm-hmm.
As a group, they were responsible for over 100,000 autopsies, an accumulation of experience that the committee deemed invaluable in the medical evidence evaluation. To determine the cause of the president's death, as well as the nature and locations of his wounds.
Okay, so we got really experienced people looking at this.
Yes, and this panel concluded that the three pathologists were not qualified to conduct a forensic autopsy. Panel member Milton Halpin, who was chief medical examiner for New York City, went so far as to say that selecting Humes, who had only taken a single course in forensic pathology, to lead this autopsy was like sending a seven-year-old boy who has never taken three lessons on the violin over to the New York Philharmonic and expecting him to perform a Tchaikovsky symphony.
Well, Jesus Christ, dude, like, calm down.
That is a roast, dude.
That is an absolute roast. Dude, as a group, they were responsible for 100,000 autopsies. I don't know what this dude is saying.
No, he's saying that the original three, he was one of the 100,000 autopsies responsible.
Oh, I see.
He was saying the original three people were, like, selecting a child to go to the fucking New York Philharmonic, yeah.
Oh, goddamn, still.
Yeah. Some researchers have pointed to the large number of doctors and nurses at Parkland Medical Hospital who reported that a major part of the back of the president's head was blown out. The back, not the top, the back. which would be consistent with a shot to the front right of the head. Because again, as we talked about before we record, exit wounds are bigger and more violent, right?
So then wouldn't that say that the front of his head was the exit wound because that was the most big and violent part of that?
Well, that's what we're saying.
Well, no, he but hold on. But he got, I think he got shot in the front of the head, which yes. would be the impact, right? So it's not the yes. exit wound that caused all that damage to the front of his head.
Almost okay, like he got right, shot twice. Right. Almost like oh, he got God. Shot twice.
Oh, no, Kyle. Oh, shit. Oh, God. Almost like he got shot twice. You're right. You're right. You're right. You're so right. Oh, God. I'm so... Dude. Oh. Kyle. You probably got shot twice. You're right.
Oh, my God, dude.
Oh, no. All right. Give me the quote.
In 1979, the HSCA noted, quote,
"The various accounts of the nature of the wounds to the president, as described by the staff at Parkland Memorial Hospital, differed from those in the Bethesda autopsy report, as well as from what appears in the autopsy photos and x-rays." Dude, that's big.
Mm-hmm.
That's real big. Big if true.
Well, the HSCA, I think, kind of sweeps this under the rug by concluding that the most probable explanation for the discrepancy between Parkland doctor's testimony and the Bethesda autopsy was that the observations of the Parkland doctors were incorrect. That's it.
Oh, I see. Excellent rebuttal. The burden of proof now relies on me because you said they were incorrect. You're absolutely right, sir. Excellent, excellent work. What the fuck?
And it's like, these are the people that were first interacting with him immediately after this gunshot versus these people who, number one, were under pressure, and number two, were inexperienced and were trusting right. their word over a much larger, experienced team of doctors.
But what you don't understand, Kyle, is that probably the discrepancy between the two groups is that the Parkland doctors were incorrect.
Did oh, you fuck. That? I didn't think of that. God fucking damn it.
God damn it.
Some critics skeptical of the official single bullet theory have stated that the bullet's trajectory, which hit Kennedy above the right shoulder blade and passed through his neck, according to the autopsy, would have had to change course to pass through Connolly's rib cage and fracture his wrist.
Right.
Kennedy's death certificate, which was signed by his personal physician, George Berkeley, locates the wound at about the level of the third thoracic vertebrae, which some claim was not high enough to exit his throat.
Whoa. I didn't even think about that. That's actually a really good point.
Because Arden, go ahead and here, let me pull up a map of the spine here and share my screen with you.
Okay. All right.
The bullet exited right here, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, for sure.
Right here. Your thoracic vertebrae start right here. This is one, second, third. The bullet came in at a downward trajectory. How does a bullet with a downward trajectory entering right here exit up here?
It doesn't. Hold on. Wait. Hold on.
I'm holding on.
That doesn't make any sense. What, did Jackie shoot him in the back of his fucking neck or something? Like, what is that supposed to mean? Maybe there were three wounds to the president. Hey. Maybe there were three. Hey, hold on. You want to know what it means? Hold on. Hey. So, let me count them out for you, okay? One shot to the front of the neck. That's why he grabs his fucking throat, and that's why he leans forward, all right? He gets shotched in the back at his third thoracic vertebra, and then my man gets domed. One, yes. two, three, boom. easy, and they just lost the bullets. They and, just lost them. Well, except for
and
one
governor and Governor Connolly gets hit. So that's four shots, right?
I forgot about that, right?
And we know at least one shot missed and damaged a curve or curb. So how many shots is that, Arden?
That's five shots?
In seven
That's
seconds.
Great in seven Dude. The reality of that just set in for a second, and that is a very violent situation to be in.
Yeah.
Dude, because like all of those people trying to shoot one thing at the same time, that's scary.
Mm-hmm.
That's a scary place to be.
Good thing all those conspiracies lined up at the exact same time. Works out really well.
It really does work out really well, doesn't it? Dude, that's crazy.
Well, Arden, we're about to get even more crazy. All right.
That was amazing. Just really quick. Kyle and I just looked at where your third thoracic vertebra would be and where Kennedy's exit wound was. And I urge you folks, like, I seriously urge you, if you are interested in this case, if you're in part seven with us and you're listening to this episode, I urge you to go look at a fucking diagram of where those vertebrae are, because it does not make any sense.
No, it simply does not line up. There is also conflicting testimony regarding the autopsy performed on Kennedy's body, particularly during the examination of his brain, and whether or not the photos submitted as evidence are the same as those taken during the examination. At Bethesda Naval Hospital, Commander J.J. Humes, the chief autopsy pathologist, noted that Kennedy's brain weighed about 1,500 grams following formalin fixation, so putting it back together. In August of 1977, Paul O'Connor, who was a laboratory technologist who assisted in the president's autopsy, told investigators for the HSCA that there was nothing left in the cranium but splattered brain matter, and there was no use opening the skull because there were no brains. Which you can see pretty fucking clearly in the Zapruder film.
Yeah, you can see clearly in the Zapruder film and in the autopsy photos, and I think it's kind of interesting to notate here what you said earlier in this episode about that allegedly the bullet that would have impacted John F. Kennedy's head would have been coming from a higher velocity rifle, moving at about twice the speed of the Carcino rifle, which would make sense with what remained of his, and I'm sorry to say it this way, folks, his literal goddamn brain.
Because, again, to get gory here, a lot of that material leaves his head, right?
You see the spray. There is a spray.
And we just said that they said that the Kennedy's brain weighed 1,500 grams at the end of this, right? An average adult human brain weighs 1,300 to 1,400 grams.
13 to 1400?
Yes. Full, healthy brain, about 1400 grams.
And his
he is saying that Kennedy's brain that exploded weighed 1500 grams.
Maybe I'm missing something here, but what does that mean?
It means that that's not Kennedy's brain in that jar.
It's a different brain from something else? That's not a human brain.
No.
Or at least...
It's not Kennedy's brain. They're fabricating this autopsy report. Because how could there be 1,500 grams of brain left to examine?
Oh!
When a human brain weighs 1,300 grams brand spanking new out the box, and his just exploded all over a park.
I got confused because I thought they reconstructed his brain. And I was like, oh, maybe John F. Kennedy's brain was just a little bigger and they reconstructed it and it weighed a little more. But no, that's what remained of his brain. That's how much they said it weighed.
Allegedly.
Now I see what you're saying. That is kind of hilarious that they would say that.
Yeah. Douglas Horn, the Association... The Assassination Record Review Board's chief analyst for military records said that he was 90 to 95% certain that the photographs in the National Archives are not Kennedy's brain. And some conspiracy theorists have said that Kennedy's brain was stolen to cover up the evidence that he was shot from the front. Because it would be pretty fucking easy to tell just by looking at the brain.
Mm-hmm. There is some absolute debauchery going on here, Kyle. This is crazy. Because, and I haven't said this blatantly the entire episode. I feel like this might be the appropriate time to say it. Watching the Zapruder film before we recorded today's episode, I am convinced that John F. Kennedy was shot from the front right. At least the bullet that hit his head was shot from the front right.
Yes.
It makes a lot of sense why they would hide that.
It does.
Because what we said, the only way that this works in the official story is if Lee Harvey Oswald is the only shooter, and if Lee Harvey Oswald is the only shooter, the only way that that happens is if the magic bullet theory is real.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm here to tell you again for like the fifth episode in a row, that's not real.
Mm-hmm.
I think very strongly he got shot in the front right.
And Arden, part of what is so interesting about that to me is that, like you said, to match their timeline that they are pushing from hours after the assassination, Oswald had to shoot Kennedy alone, and Oswald had to be in the Texas School Book Depository, right? But here's the thing. He got shot in the front of his face. And I'm just muddying the waters here. I'm going to fully acknowledge that. He got shot in the front of his face. There is nobody, and we are going to talk about this next week, there is nobody that can fully place Oswald on the sixth floor of the school book depository in the exact moment of the assassination. Right?
That is true.
So why not just put Oswald on the grassy knoll and let him shoot the president from the grassy knoll?
Oh, because, and hear me out with this, and maybe this is where you're leading me to. Lee Harvey Oswald would be part of the, let's just say, the CIA's plot, right? To kill JFK. Right. Which leads back to something you said last episode. There could have been a completely different conspiracy assassination plot going on at the exact same time.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of wild. It gets more funny every time we talk about it, but it also kind of seems more plausible every time we talk about it.
It certainly does. More deeply plausible.
I really like what you did there, Kyle. That was really, really good. That is a gold mine. Remember this moment in JFK 7, folks. That was one of the best things I've ever heard come out of your mouth, Kyle.
All right. We are almost at the end of here. Let's finish this up. In his book, JFK and the Unspeakable, James Douglas cites autopsy doctor Pierre Fink's testimony at the trial of Clay Shaw, which we're going to talk about next week, as evidence that Fink was a reluctant witness to the military control over the doctor's examination of the president's body. And a bone fragment found in Dealey Plaza by William Harper the day following the assassination was reported by the HSCA's forensic pathology panel to have been from Kennedy's skull, a part of his parietal bone. And some critics of the lone gunman theory, including James Douglas, David Lifton, and David Mantic, contend that the bone fragment that Harper found is not the parietal bone, but is actually a piece of Kennedy's occipital bone that was ejected from an exit wound in the back of his head. And they allege that the finding of this evidence is evidence of a cover-up, as it proves that the skull radiographs taken during the autopsy, which do not show significant bone damage loss in the occipital area, are not authentic.
Oh my god, the tinfoil hat is on, folks. Kyle is wearing their tinfoil hat, and here's the thing.
again, if he shot in the front right, that's true. There's an exit wound in the back of his head. And that's one of the skull fragments that is so plausible. That is so real.
Yeah.
I give the green light on that for sure.
One last thing I want to talk about that I feel like kind of slips into the cracks of such a major moment in history is Nellie Connolly, Governor Connolly's wife. In her 2003 book, From Love Field, Our Final Hours with JFK, Connolly shared her personal diary of the events written in the days immediately after the assassination. In her book, she said that she believed that her husband was hit by a bullet that was separate from the two that hit Kennedy.
I mean, that's big. That's amazing that we have that.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's a big tick in my corner, at least.
Mm-hmm. During the gunfire, Nellie Connolly got down in the car to take care of her husband, who had slumped after the second shot. She said, quote,
"I never looked back again. I was just trying to take care of him."
Connolly had said that the most enduring image she had of the assassination in Dallas was a mixture of blood and roses. In a 2003 interview with the Associated Press, she said, quote,
"It's the image of yellow roses and red roses and blood all over the car, all over us. I'll never forget it. It was so quick and so short, so potent."
I know that's heavy, and I wanted to end this episode with a bit of a heavier quote, just to remind us, me and Arden in the moment, and listeners listening to this, that this was a very real thing. A man died, and it traumatized the entire nation. And I think that's a big part of the reason that so much conspiracy theory has sprung up around this, because as we're coming to the end of this series, as me and Arden are formulating our back-ass-word stance, our opinions on what really happened here, we talked about this a little bit before recording today that, you know, and you mentioned it when we were talking about eyewitness testimony, that our brains want that bow on things. We want closure so bad. And what it's really starting to seem like to me, and not to speak for Arden, but for Arden, is that the answer that we have doesn't give us closure. And it sucks. But
yeah,
it's the answer that we have. And as fun and crazy as it is to talk about this, you know, it did have insane ripples for that we're still feeling today, you know. So, because whatever, however it happened, however many times he was shot at the end of the day, right? And I don't know. I just think that's important to keep in mind, you know?
It is important to keep in mind. And again, I don't know how we edited the episode, but me and Kyle had mentioned or not mentioned earlier, again, depending on how we edited, that if there are a bunch of assassination plots going on at the same time, if there are multiple shooters, and there are a bunch of different bullets coming from a lot of different directions, that is such a scary situation to be in.
Yeah.
And of course, like, John F. Kennedy was obviously the largest victim of that circumstance. But beyond that, there are hundreds of people all around the situation enduring this, experiencing this, and that in of itself is a traumatizing event. And so, like, I agree with you, Kyle. I think it's very important to keep in mind, especially because we are 7 episodes deep into a conspiracy, that like, real shit happens during this. And this is the reality is that John F. Kennedy was shot in front of hundreds of people, and it impacted millions, perhaps even billions of people at that point, which is an unimaginable circumstance.
Yeah. And that, my little untrained coroners,
stop,
is episode 7 of John F. Kennedy.
Wow, Kyle. Professor Kyle, may I say. And may I also just say, before we go any further tonight, my friend, phenomenal work on this outline.
Thank you.
This is the moment that my brain melted. I agree with something that you said before that we started recording. The more that I learn about this, I feel like the less I know. I feel like I'm pretty set in some things. But I even told you something that I was set on before we started recording, and now I'm not as set on it. Like, I walked into today's episode being like, oh yeah, Lee Harvey Oswald definitely shot 3 bullets from the Texas School Book Depository. Now I don't know as much. Mm-hmm. Now I really don't know. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I mean, it is just such, it's like what you said. This is such a deep case, and it is such a saturated case too. It is very hard to distinguish what's going on. Because like, if there is a shooter in the grassy knoll and it's not Badge Man, where the hell did that shooter come from? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where are they? What did they shoot him with? And where did they shoot him from?
Maybe we're talking about that a little bit next week.
I guess I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but there are a lot of unanswered questions at this point.
Yes.
And again, the more I learn, the less I know. And it's kind of beautiful, and it's really frustrating.
And spoiler alert, there's going to be some unanswered questions at the end of this.
I'm sure.
So we're going to have to accept that. And yeah, so there's a bunch more information for you about fucking this whole scenario. We still got a ways to go. Thank you so much for sticking with us. As always, we're going to save our back-ass word stance for the end of the series. But and I'm not even going to ask how you're feeling, because you really just stated it pretty well. So I guess I'll just end it by saying thank you so much for listening to the podcast, everybody.
Thank you so very much. It means the world to be here. You folks could be doing anything with your time, and you're listening to our brains melt in real time, and it is beautiful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it means the world to us. Me and Arden, before we record throughout the week, every single week, are just always talking about, you know, how much the show really does mean to the both of us, for like our mental health, and even just being able to connect with a friend for a bit every week is really awesome. And the fact that you guys are here for that with us just makes it all the better. So thank you so much. If you are enjoying the show, please subscribe and review. It makes a huge difference for us. It helps get us into people's eyes a little bit more. And if you really think that someone else will enjoy the show, please, please, please go ahead and share it with them directly. Because word of mouth is the best way to tell your friends that the Back-Ass Words podcast is knee to mid-thigh deep in a insane JFK series. Fuck, next week, this will be our longest series.
Next week will be part 8.
So that will tie it with Jonestown, I guess, right? Because we had 7 for Jonestown, didn't we? Or did we have 8?
We had 8. We did have 8 for Jonestown. So this will tie. This will officially tie, and then the next week it will surpass Jonestown. This will be our longest series on the podcast, and it is so beautiful that you folks are here for that, because you know.
You fucking know, dude.
That the Back-Ass Words podcast is your favorite podcast.
You know it like we know that autopsy was one of the most fucked up autopsies in the history of the medical world, dude.
Oh my God. Oh my God, what a failure.
You can listen to our previous episodes for more. I would recommend, let me pull up the list. What haven't we plugged for a minute? Let's see.
Go ahead and pull it up.
I would recommend our episode on, you know what? We're going to go for something a little fun, something light, because we were pretty heavy this one. So I'm going to recommend our episode number 86 on the Kraken.
Dude, the Kraken was a fun episode. That was during, we were doing a lot of water-themed episodes.
Well, it was supposed to be our water-themed
Our water month.
Didn't quite make it to the end of the month, but it was.
We didn't quite make it.
That's okay.
The, The Kraken was really fun. We get to reference a book in that one as well. So,
oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah. We talk about 2,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Yeah, dude, it was a very fun episode. Go check it out if you need a little bit of a cool down after this one.
Yeah, you Alec can follow... was on that episode too.
Yes, we love Alec so much.
Yes.
You can follow me and Arden on Twitter. I'm at @BackassWordKyle. Arden is at @Arden_Smith. And you can follow the podcast on all of your favorite social medias. On Twitter, @BackassWordsPod. Instagram, @BackassWordsPod. TikTok, @BackassPod. On Facebook, just search the BackassWords Podcast. And if you want to support the show, if you really appreciate what we do here, and you want to help keep the lights on over in our dual studio set up here, you can go ahead and support us on Patreon at patreon.com/backasspod. We have two different levels there. You can just throw us a buck if you want to support us and get into our very fun Discord chat. Or if you want to support us at $5 a month, you do also get access to our weekly, every single week, 4 episodes a month bonus episode, The Wednesday Phenomenon.
The Wednesday Phenomenon. It's so fun. We have such a fun time. Come on over.
We appreciate our patrons so much. Thank you so much, everybody that supports us over there. I'm Kyle.
I'm Arden.
And we will see you next week. Unless someone just absolutely drops the ball on your autopsy to the point that they have to put out fake autopsy pictures. Just straight up fake. Because I'm sorry. That's not JFK. That's not that guy. That's different man in those pictures. I'm sorry.
I can't believe that we didn't talk about it more, but it really is like strange because like the first picture you showed me, I was like, who is that guy? I don't know who that is. He looks
not
like
my
he's
president.
He looks like he's a different weight in both of those photos too. But just remember that even if they are fake autopsies, at least the gore that you're seeing is not real. So you're at least safe from that.
That's true. Yeah. Even though it's frighteningly real looking, don't worry. The nightmares you're having because of looking at the pictures of JFK's autopsy, it's fake. Get over it. You're good. Come on, dude.
And you have to
so
think
that you
like
can stay safe. I don't fucking know.
So that you can stay
we
weird.
We did a bad job
well.
Setting up our fucking.
Oh my god.
Outro.
Oh my god. Just fucking.
We'll see you guys. Just because our brains are melted. So stay safe. Stay weird. The danger's real. We'll see you next week. We love you. Join
oh
the
my god. Yes, please. Wow.
Oh god.
What frame of the Zapruder film was was John F. Kennedy shot in? The top four answers are on the board. 313. Give me 313. That's the number one answer.